Kerry Nosler here with you. Thank you so much for joining us again. Very, very interesting, thought-provoking, thought-inducing book, Yoga Beyond Belief, Insights to Awaken and Deepen Your Practice. Ganga White, our special guest today. A very, very interesting man, very influential in terms of teaching, innovating, and promulgating yoga since 1967. That's about 40 years. Having led international yoga organizations, established yoga centers in major cities that have been emulated the world over, a leader in the forefront of the wave of yogi in America. He has extensive training, experience in the field of yoga, combined with education in science, physics, and electronics, which you understand if you do read the book Yoga Beyond Belief. Brings a very interesting East-West perspective to not only yoga, but also meditation and spirituality. Has founded the world-renowned White Lotus Foundation, located in Santa Barbara, California. Offers programs internationally. It's on 40 acres. Residential retreat and primary teaching institute, offering yoga workshops, teacher training, and advanced study to students and teachers from around the world. And if you'd like to know more about that, you can go to whitelotus.org. He also created several number one best-selling videos, Total Yoga, the Flow series, and as I said, the author of the book Yoga Beyond Belief, insights again into the whole area of yoga. The LA Times has referred to him as the man pretty much responsible for bringing yoga to Los Angeles, and along with his wife Tracy, Tracy Rich, they are the people who are heading up the White Lotus Foundation that we mentioned in Santa Barbara, California. Very, very happy to be able to talk to Ganga White today. Ganga, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Look forward to it.
Well, I tell you truthfully, the book was more than I had bargained for, and I shouldn't even, you know, have had any preconceived conditions and notions about the whole thing. But when I read the book, obviously I'm reading about your journey through life and in the myriad examples that you use for your own inspiration. And it's obvious that whatever you would have decided to study, whether it be yoga or physics or Tai Chi, whatever it had to have been, it would certainly have been a vehicle for a much deeper introspection and look at life. And you offer that as a path to, I guess, to our own spirituality and awakening as well, the idea that it's a continuing exploration of all that is about us.
Well, learning has always been one of my top interests and values, and also adventure. So I've never hesitated to jump on a plane or a train and go to learn something or open a book.
You started doing yoga, obviously, when it was in its nascent form in this country as well. You've seen many, many changes. Obviously, to kind of categorize them all in one basket would be difficult. But in terms of where we are now from where you first started, what are some of the primary things that you've seen evolve and or change as we've embraced yoga in the United States?
Well, it's gone from something that was considered very strange and you had to be kind of a rebel or a radical to even do it, to a household word where it's in schools and, you know, in every single magazine and movie and television program. So that's been a big change. It's just been, you know, really accepted by the mainstream, and the benefits and values of yoga have been appreciated and understood. And as a practice, it's evolved considerably. I'm of the school that yoga is an evolving art and science. And there's a difference. Some people tend to feel that yoga was really defined and mapped out in the past. But, you know, I really believe that we need to continue to grow and evolve the understanding and practice of it. And I think, you know, the last 40 years that I've been involved with it, it's grown enormously in efficacy and understanding, and the practical use of it has been greatly refined.
Do you think that's a product of, let's say, the Western experience, you as a product of that as well, embracing this ancient practice, kind of
Absolutely.
Bringing two sensibilities to it?
You know, the meeting of East and West has yielded great fruits on both sides of the globe. And, you know, when yoga came west, there's a ancient great saying or a quote from an old text that says, when the iron horse flies, the teachings will move west. So it seemed to predict the airplane or something, when the iron horse flies. So when yoga came to the west, it mutated, and I think in many good ways it connected with science and technology and information systems and, you know, the good old American mixing pot, and I think that helped it tremendously.
Well, actually, having been around a while myself and remembering the early days of yoga when it first started coming out, there were those who thought they had to emulate everything that was from India. As a yogi, whether it was the dress or the food, and it was just part of what you had to do in order to be there. And obviously you've, again, taken it in a direction that makes it more familiar and comfortable for folks who happen to grow up here.
Well, in the 70s, you know, it came over at the turn of the century, but there was a big wave of interest in yoga in the 60s and the 70s. And there was, like you say, people were wearing white clothes and beads and becoming very Indianized, if that's a word. And now there's a much bigger wave. It's huge, and there's a tremendous interest in, you know, in India. It's enormously popular, but people aren't taking on as many of the trappings. It's much more, you know, of a merging of the two perspectives and cultures.
Do you think it's confusing, though, to folks today? I mean, everything seems to be yoga has been, let's say, siphoned off into whatever particular area seems to be more of interest, whether it be aerobic yoga, knitting yoga.
Hula yoga, yoga lattes.
Any number of permutations.
Well, if you just look at it and compare it to biology, when you're in a time of great change and mutation, all the mutations aren't good. The best ones survive. But I think, you know, there's a lot of good things happening and a lot of new ground being broken and, the synthesis of various disciplines, which are yielding beneficial results. And there's a lot of froth and fluff, too.
And I suspect that's partly why you have kind of done your work and established the foundation that you have for teaching, so that there can be some kind of, as it were, credibility, you know, to those who go out and offer instructions, for example.
Yes, the hungry masses need thirst no more. There's a good book out, Yoga Beyond Belief.
Well, but isn't that what it kind of leads to? And when you look at the evolution of these kinds of movements, I mean, it goes through, as I said, different permutations, but eventually some part of it has to be kind of logically systemized and standardized in order to make sure that people get what has worked for others.
Well, that's absolutely true, and everybody says that's what they're doing. You know, you go to any yoga lineage, if you know, we can just stick in the topic of yoga. If you go to any yoga lineage or school, they're going to say, we are teaching the authentic practice and so on. And there's a lot of you know, contradiction and conflict of opinion and practice. So that's exactly what I was addressing in the book, Yoga Beyond Belief, that instead of having one particular belief system and feeling that there's a particular path or a particular way that's the right way to do yoga, instead of making that argument, what I'm doing is saying that if one can understand the exact process that's happening to you when you practice yoga and the internal mechanisms, then you can develop your own guidance system so that you can develop your own yoga and your own practice that's optimal for you, as opposed to trying to fit yourself into somebody else's idea of the perfect practice. So I think that's what I tried to do, is show people what the process is, what's happening inside of them physically, mentally, spiritually, in all the domains, not just the health practices of yoga, and so they can find their own way and understanding rather than just follow somebody or following a belief system.
All right, Yoga Beyond Belief. That could be called the thesis statement if you read the book, in terms of the personal philosophy of Ganga White, our special guest today. Ganga, you know, I was really impressed, intrigued, and drawn into your own personal story of when you started your own practice, achieving some great success in flexibility, and then finding a roadblock, a setback, as it were, with a degenerative disc. But what was interesting was the process back, and I obviously get the feeling, and then as you relate in the book, that that was really instrumental in helping to formulate just kind of how you approach the whole practice of yoga.
Right, I relate about that in a chapter on preventing and healing injuries. We all get injured, whether we're into fitness or not. People can do it by picking up a sack of groceries, and a lot of back injuries accumulate over a long period of time and don't reach, you know, a problem level till the straw that breaks your back, so to speak. So I had some sports and various other kinds of injuries that eventually came to a low back injury culmination, and I was set way back in my practice. And I had to learn how to have my own body's intelligence actually guide me in the practice and show how to move and how to adjust the poses so that you can actually regain all your strength and mobility and heal the injury. So yes, it was a great learning experience.
Because as I understood in the book as well, that the kind of the previous system that you were part of, they emphasized doing the practices and achieving whatever was going on, but not really a lot of kind of body sense in terms of kind of the correct way to be there, but other than just kind of stressing doing the motion.